Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Cinco de Mayo Friday happy hour, man. World's colliding. We're aligning. A lot of good stuff happening around here, man.
Happy Friday, Crudy, Evan, our fair audience. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone.
Buddy, there are so many tantalizing headlines. I don't even know where to start, but we did promise the audience we got to find former U.S. attorney and friend of ours. He's coming soon. He is James Santel, host of Morning Cannolis across the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. every Saturday. You're going to get up tomorrow and listen. You know what's good for you. But he's going to give you a little preview today, Dom. In the E. Jean Carroll, the deposition, we now have the sound from the former president. And we've got some stuff about Jenny Thomas getting funneled $25,000 more.
Right, 25 grand more.
But, you know, let's keep her name off it because we'd hate to implicate her in the scheme, right?
And what was that? That was Kellyanne Conway's organization, right?
Well,
they were former campaign manager for Donald Trump. I mean, it's so very incestuous.
Well, where do you want to start then, Dom? What about the deposition? Should we go there?
I think we should start at the deposition.
And we'll get to the phones. Be patient, folks. We love you, audience. 844-967-2789. And I may even have a response to Gary eventually. But let's get to the deposition. Should we start with the sound, Dom?
Yes,
got we some should. Sound.
Let's do it.
We watched this. There was tape. Lordy, there's tape, Dom. And we only saw about 5 minutes of the excerpt Donald Trump testimony, but we've got like three sound bites for you. And if you'll indulge us, Ebone did the hard work. Here is what Donald Trump sounds like under deposition. Mostly deny, deny, deny. It didn't happen. Cut number one.
Did you or anyone on your staff reach out to anyone at Bergdorf Goodman?
I didn't have to reach out to anybody because it didn't happen. And by the way, if it did happen, it would have been reported within minutes. Talking about going to a major floor, probably, I assume, the most important floor.
How would he know?
A major floor in a major department store. That's a very busy store, by the way. And checkout counters and everything else. And I would be in there. I mean, it's the most ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous, disgusting story. It was just made up.
Of course, the former president of the United States, through a civil trial, is being sued. The accusation is he raped E. Jean Carroll at a department store, Bergdorf's. Apparently a very important department store and a very important floor.
Yeah.
He allegedly raped her.
Lingerie floor, perhaps.
And he also, the lawsuit is actually about the defamation, because when she made the accusation, he piled on and said, not only did it not happen, look at her, she's not my type, effectively, he said, but he also said it never happened, she's a liar. So according to E. Jean Carroll, she's been defamed. And the evidence, the preponderance of the evidence in a civil trial, although we'll check in with Jim Santel soon, certainly seems to weigh against the former president. Hell, the man hasn't even been there, although he wanted to reserve his right to, stand against his accuser.
Yes, the judge actually giving Trump, I believe, until Sunday, an extra 3 days to make his determination, make his mind up if he wants to come and actually testify. An abundance of caution, perhaps, by the judge.
But instead, our understanding, the crack Trump legal team, which includes Taco Pina, Joe, and Alina Haba, who has now been added to the defense table. She apparently was also at the deposition. She was Trump's counsel at the deposition. This happened last October. And rather than having the man testify and defend himself, they go to this contentious deposition tape from last October that we now bring you. This, our understanding, is about as early as anyone's played it, man. 5 o'clock news barely started. We got it right now. Let's play it for the people. Cut number two from the Trump deposition in the E. Jean Carroll case. Have you seen this photo? Now, we've seen the photo, just for clarity's sake. There is a newscaster, Johnson, and the other person in the photo. Who is it, Dom? Why, it's E. Jean Carroll.
But Trump doesn't think so.
But of his own...
I've seen a photograph that shows you with Ms. Carroll on a receiving line.
Along with a lot of other people. This was a very public... I think it was a charity or a celebrity event or something. And I think that's her big claim to fame, you know, that she shook my hand at some celebrity event.
So the answer to my question is yes. There's a photo of you with Ms. Carroll in a receiving line.
I saw there was a photo on a receiving line, yes.
Okay.
So the counsel for the plaintiff, for E. Jean Carroll, has just shown him, here is the picture of you and E. Jean Carroll. Do you acknowledge that you do, in fact, have a prior, at least you bumped into this person? Oh, I shake lots of hands. I meet lots of people. Sir, the Scott Walker, I met the Russian spy Marina Butina at the rope line. Not, in fact, at the VIP room at the Nashville NRA, but that's a different story for a different day. Back to Trump. Trump, listen close, folks, because my jaw dropped. And I, Ebon, you got to hear this. So thank you, Evan, for doing the hard work. You got to hear this, folks. Listen closely. Trump, of his own volition, listen to what he says. Again, he's being shown the picture of Donald Trump, Johnson, who apparently was a newscaster who he knew very well, and E. Jean Carroll. And listen to what he says. Play it.
I'm going to ask you, is this the photo that you were just referring to?
I think so, yes.
Okay. And do you recall when you first saw this photo?
At some point during the process, I saw it. That's, I guess, her husband, John Johnson, who was an anchor for ABC. Nice guy. I thought, I mean, I don't know him, but I thought he was pretty good at what he did. I don't even know who the woman, let's see, I don't know who, it's Marla.
You say Marla's in this photo?
That's Marla, yeah, that's my wife.
Which woman are you pointing to?
No.
That's here.
Carol.
Oh, is that?
The person you just pointed to was E. Jean Carroll.
Who is that? Who is this?
Point, your wife.
And the person, the woman on the right is your then wife,
I don't
Ivana?
Know, this was the picture.
Ivana.
I assume that's John Johnson. Is that
that's Carol?
Because it's very blurry.
It's not blurry.
No, it's not at all.
And Trump has already made the assertion his prior defense is effectively, she's not my type.
Right.
And in fact, during the depositions, he makes the same statement to the plaintiff's attorney, like, and I wouldn't find you attractive either. You're not my type either. But when asked to identify, actually, whether or not he's been photographed specifically with the woman he said he never met, and they're trying to establish, yes, they've been in the same room, they've met. That's all this plaintiff's attorney is trying to establish. And Trump, of his own volition,
he offers it,
mistakes the plaintiff, the woman that alleges he raped her and then lied about it, claims that that was his ex-wife, Marla. Because it's the spitting image. There's a definite resemblance. They're both very pretty women. You could see where Trump might have made the mistake. Like, maybe he was attracted to her. My jaw dropped, man. How is that your defense? How is that your defense? Anyways, there it is. The newest. My jaw dropped. Lordy, that tape is stunning. I think he's going to lose this civil trial, Dom.
A little bit on this. The testimony in the trial concluded yesterday, clearing the way for closing arguments by the lawyers to happen as soon as Monday, barring a last-minute decision by Trump to testify. And if I was a betting man, Trump ain't testifying.
Oh, I think that just stands for itself, Tom. We've heard his sworn deposition where he identifies the plaintiff, the woman he allegedly raped, as being his ex-wife.
The same one he says he's not attracted to, that's not his type, looks exactly like his type. Unless you say that since his type was the ex-wife, that she was what, no longer his type because she's the ex?
There's quite a resemblance. Well, Ivanka, at least as a brunette, but the other wives look just alike, very similar. A lot like E. Jean Carroll back in the day, at least
right.
In that particular photo.
Almost like he has a type.
844-967-2789. Jerry from Arizona. How you doing, Jerry?
Hey, Jerry.
How are you guys? It's warming up there, isn't it?
It is. We finally got warm
today.
I brought it back from Arizona, Jerry.
It's finally hot. It is H-O-T, but I'll take it any day. I don't know how you guys can handle it up there. I did Colorado for 73 years, and I hate winters.
Anyway, you and I both, sister.
Don't you? Well, what are you doing up there in Madison?
Drink.
I know.
Thick blood and booze. It's
watch the Packers and drink too much. I guess, Jerry, get a little chubby.
And you have, a snow blower? What do you do for your driveways?
You wouldn't think I would need one, Jerry. I got two teenage boys, but mostly I encourage the wife to do it. Good for her health.
Good. Yeah. My ex-husband was allergic to lawn grass, and I used to have to cut the lawn, but it's a good exercise. Anyway, you know he's guilty of the rape, but he'll never get convicted. But I've got to tell you this. Do you realize I have never turned Fox on in my life? I wouldn't dare. But do you know that people that listen to Fox don't even know what happened? They don't know about the $787.5 million Dominion voting systems lawsuit loss and why Tucker Carlson is gone. They don't know. I hate to admit it, but I'm 2.5 miles from a Walmart. So obviously, for the first time in my life since I moved here, that's where I shop to save money. And the greeter at the door, you know damn well they pay him they encourage him to bash Biden, you know, in the press.
Jerry, short on time. Thank you for listening. Come back. More Devil's Advocates, more of your Friday grievances.
The Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open. I'll try to squeeze you in before our next guest, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, host of Morning Cannolis 9 to 11 on Civic Media on Saturdays. Our number, 844-967-2789.
Tom, one more topic I got to get out there before Jim joins us. Another 25K for Jenny Thomas? I have questions, says Ruth Marcus over at the Washington Post. I share your inquisitive nature. I also have questions. Dom, let me read a little from this. No mention of Jenny, of course. That was Leonard Leo's instruction to pollster Kellyanne Conway in 2012. Kellyanne Conway, we hear her name again later, I believe, Dom. Leo, who sits astride an opaque network of conservative legal groups, told Conway he wanted to, air quotes, give Virginia Jenny Thomas another $25,000. Conway was doing work for a Leo operation, the Judicial Education Project, and she quickly complied with Leo's directive under the bland bookkeeping designation Supplement for Constitutional Polling and Opinion Consulting. That's pretty bland.
Yeah.
According to reporting by the Post, Emma Brown, Sean Boberg, and Jonathan O'Connell, Conway's firm paid Jenny Thompson's firm, Liberty Consulting, $80,000 from June of 2011 to June of 2012. It was slated to pay $20,000 more by the end of 2012. This transfer does not have the aura of an ordinary business transaction. There's nothing wrong with the Judicial Education Project hiring a pollster, and nothing wrong with Conway's firm, the polling company, enlisting Thomas's consulting firm as a subcontractor. Moreover, Jenny Thomas, who was a conservative activist before she met her husband, Clarence Justice Thomas, should be able to, should be able to have her own career within the bounds of appropriateness given her husband's position as a Supreme Court justice. But why is Leo directing how much and when Conway will give to Jenny Thomas, a transaction that would ordinarily be between the consultant and the subcontractor? Usually invoices are submitted and work substantiated before the money is paid,
right,
rather than the other way around. And as the Post story points out, Leo, a powerful Washington operative who has overseen a generation-long project to fill the federal judiciary with conservative jurists, didn't have any official role at the Judicial Education Project. Its president at the time, Neil Corkery, certified on the organization's tax filing that no one other than officers or key employees had control over the operations. So, Dom, what work did Jenny Thomas actually do for this rather significant sum? Like going on $100,000. To be blunt, was this just a way of Leo funneling money to the Thomases? Not just any money, but tax-deductible donations that must be used for charitable purposes? Did Leo use Conway's firm as a cutout to avoid a direct linkage to the charitable organization? Were there other such arrangements in which Leo sent funds to Jenny Thomas? Yes, I have many questions, Dom.
I have many questions as well, Crudy. Why the mania for secrecy? Quote, knowing how disrespectful, malicious, and gossipy people can be, I've always tried to protect the privacy of Justice Thomas and Jenny, Leo told the Post. That's one explanation. These were internal records. Who's gossiping about them? An alternative explanation: Leo didn't want the Judicial Education Project, if the Internal Revenue Service or others inquired, connected to Jenny Thomas. Then there are the questions about direct overlap with the business of the court. In December of 2012, the same year that Jenny Thomas was receiving money through the Judicial Education Project, the group filed a Friend of the Court brief in Shelby County versus Holder, which would turn out to be a landmark case eviscerating the Voting Rights Act. If his wife received $100,000 from a group with an interest in the outcome of the case, should Clarence Thomas have recused himself from the decision? That's a complex issue on which serious experts quoted by the Post differ. The federal recusal statute requires judges to step aside from any case in which their impartiality might be reasonably questioned. There is little risk here that Thomas was going to be actually influenced by payments to his wife. He was going to cut back voting rights in any event, as he had previously. Of course, that shouldn't end the inquiry. The question is whether the payments would raise doubts about the justice's impartiality. All this underscores the inadequacy of existing financial disclosure rules. In this situation, unlike others involving the justice, the issue isn't whether he followed the letter or spirit of the disclosure law. It's whether the law needs to be revamped. The rules require reporting only if the source, not the amount of income, in Jenny Thomas's case, Liberty Consulting, not the clients of the consulting firm. There's no way of knowing that any money came to the Thomases from the Judicial Education Project via the polling company. There's been a lot of reporting over the years about Leo's sprawling financial empire, but the Post story offers a glimpse into its long secretive inner workings. The View, quote, no mention of Jenny, of course, is not an attractive run. Ruth Marcus, writing over at the Washington Post.
The plot thickens. Jim Santel joins us soon. Julie from Minneapolis is next, though. Welcome, Julie. What do you got for
Hi,
us?
Hi, Julie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I never could figure out the mystery to Donald Trump's character. It was driving me crazy. I finally got a piece of insight, and I'm sure this is accurate. Another progressive radio host was digging into this. And Donald Trump's grandfather owned brothels in California. All of a sudden, the lights went on, and his character and something about his being got to me. And speaking of character, way back in the day in 1991, Anita Hill, the hearings, the whole deal, I had a job where I could watch the hearings, and I watched them every day for 2 or 3 weeks and got a look at this man's character. So why should we be surprised that he's crooked in other areas of his life?
Right. Julie, appreciate your call and listening on KTNF AM 950. I still believe Anita Hill. Come back. James Santel, our fine guest, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis, friend of the Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
Well, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Cinco de Mayo Happier Happy Hour, rolling through it with you and our fine guest. He's just joined. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney. And Jim, we like to promote the morning show, Saturday mornings, Morning Cannolis. You got to get up. That's like mid-morning, 9 to 11. Get up tomorrow, listen to him on the Civic Media app. Jim, we'll give him a little preview today. Before we were getting back on the air, you and I were talking about this stunning deposition sound from Donald Trump and the fact that he identified E. Jean Carroll as Marla, thought it was his ex-wife, and had to be corrected by counsel at the table. Jim, that had to be damning. That would have been presented. Would that have been, could the plaintiff have presented that deposition testimony at trial?
Absolutely. So a couple of things, just a procedural piece is, if you designate a pretrial deposition, which are usually purposes of discovery, just questioning what happened, you designate it as a trial deposition. Everybody knows you're going to present it at trial. You can do that. Gives you a chance for cross-examination. So that's what happened here. And substantively, you're absolutely right. He is presented with this photograph, identifies this as Marla. That's my former wife. He is wrong about that. In fact, that is E. Jean Carroll. She's the plaintiff. Why is that relevant? Why does Judge Kaplan say, yes, I'll let you introduce that? Why is that played? Because it shows, it's a refutation of Donald Trump's statement that E. Jean Carroll is not his type, not attracted to her, would never go in that direction. In fact, presumably he did, because he thought that was his wife, or at least one of his wives. So it's entirely relevant. Judge let it in, and it goes to, again, to this issue of what Donald Trump thinks, what's in his mind, what his intent is all about, and presumably what he did here as well, refutes that notion that E. Jean Carroll, at least at that time, was not attractive to him, because that woman is attractive to him. That's his wife, or so he thought.
I believe the quote was, I say this with as much respect as I can, but she's not my type, not my type in any way, shape, or form.
Well, counselor, if I may interject, that was his ex-wife. So could that mean that, you know, she's no longer his type? It's hard to keep track, Jim.
It is. We've got a lot of wives. We've got a lot of time distance as well. And without going down that road too far, we all change a little bit over time. But this was a picture, a photograph, again, of some years past. And so, again, the judge certainly would have weighed all that and said, yes, it still comes in. The jury should hear it. It's not good for Donald Trump. Many other things in the course of this trial also not at all good for him. That's one that stands out because it's so easy to grab onto, easy for a jury to seize on and say, you know what, this guy does this, and this is his mindset.
How much jeopardy is Trump in here? Like, I mean, how big could this award be? You had mentioned to me what E. Jean Carroll thought she needed to restore her reputation, but could there be punitive damages piled on, counselor?
All kinds of things, subtly and not so subtly, directly, indirectly. There's apparently some expert testimony, I didn't review it specifically, that she brought forward, because she does. She's looking for damages, right? That's what you're asking for here, especially on the defamation charge. So how was she damaged? She presents evidence from an expert that says to go in and restore her reputation, not about the sexual assault per se, but about the lies that Donald Trump presumably told indicating that it didn't happen in the first place, the defamation piece. So she comes forward with an expert who says, in order to restore your reputation online, publicly, generally, somewhere in the neighborhood, about $2.7 million. In other words, I can put together something for you that gets you back in the public view, such that people no longer think you're a liar, you're a deceiver, you're somebody who's just after some publicity here. That's how much it would take. Jury can certainly listen to that. Juries do have to do this very difficult task always of assigning a monetary amount to damages. But plaintiff's counsel does have an obligation to give them some guidance. And that's at least where they started here. So we'll see if they return a verdict sometime next week, presumably, not only on liability, but how much money this is worth.
Now, we talked about the settlement of the defamation suit in the Foxy News. That is a corporation, and obviously the settlement was what the settlement was. I cannot see Donald Trump running out to settle this weekend. I just don't think it's going to happen. Could they use that? Could the jury use that as a benchmark if defamation is the charge and smearing of the reputation, not to compounded by the fact, obviously, the underlying charges, the man raped her and then lied about it and said she's so detestable, I would never, rape her? So, Jim, could the damages be in the hundreds of millions, or is that grotesque relative to what findings would be? Would the court knock it down then?
Yeah, but probably hundreds of millions, that would probably be excessive. But so the judges always do have this prerogative to look at a verdict and say, is that simply too much? Does that sort of strike you, the normal person, even a judicial person, as being outside the pale of something reasonable? And judges do have the option to do that, again, depending upon the particular way it's described under the jury verdict. But here also, judges typically also defer an awful lot to a jury when it comes to specifics. You can certainly appeal that as well and say the jury was influenced inappropriately by one factor or another. And so an appellate court can also indicate that this was an extraordinary amount. Here, as your question also indicates, it's not just the defamation, right? All this is tied up together. The sexual assault, the rape itself, the lying about it. This is a woman who suffered a lot. And I think it's a difficult thing for jurors to look at this and say anything other than that we want to compensate this woman for what she has been put through. Maybe not specifically for the sexual assault. That's very difficult. She's been a victim of a horrific crime, but also to tell her that we believe her story. And that for that reason, all these things factor in. This is an interesting amalgam of both the underlying crime, if you will, even though it's not a criminal trial, and the defamation, which is civil. Juries can look at all of this and say, what is the right thing to do? That's why we have juries of your peers come in and say, we think this is decent, this is just, this is the rule of law.
A man with no peers, former U.S. Attorney James Santel, our guest, host of Morning Cannoli's Saturdays, 9 to 11 on Civic Media here. Jim, the plaintiff and the defendant have rested their cases, and CBS is reporting that that deposition was in fact played Wednesday and Thursday. So both sides rested their case on Thursday. Trump's attorney, they're not calling any witnesses, and further waived Trump's right to testify in the case. Now, the judge apparently said, well, we're going to give you a full and fair opportunity until 5 p.m. on Sunday. Jim, is that, I mean, I appreciate it. I guess you want to have an abundance of caution given, you know, the circumstances and an ex-president, so on and so forth. But that seems a little strange to me. Counselor, what's your opinion on that?
It's a little bit odd. Normally, my experience in civil cases, certainly criminal trials as well, is once you stand up and say maybe those magic words, plaintiff rests, defense rests, that's it. And frankly, if you've forgotten something, you actually have to ask the judge, well, gee, could we reopen so I could get this in? And you can do that as well. It's in the discretion of the court. Here, you've got Judge Kaplan, who again knows what he's talking about. And he says, all right, probably again, precisely as you said, Don, to preserve this record here, no great time loss. I'll give you just until the weekend here. If your client gives it some thought, I think he's overseas right now, wants to come in on Monday, I'll still give him that opportunity, but you got to tell me. And then that's the cutoff, kind of preserving the record here as well. And then presumably going into closing arguments, which we'll hear then on Monday. And again, probably likely that we'll get a jury verdict sometime next week and find out what all this means to those peers who have listened to all this evidence for a couple of weeks now.
Jim Santel, our fine guest, former U.S. Attorney, host of Morning Cannolis, 9 to 11 Saturdays, right here on the Civic Media Network. Jim, reporting of the transcript, the depositional transcript of Donald Trump, this one, stunning to me. The plaintiff's attorney, representing E. Jean Carroll, read the former president's own words from the Access Hollywood tape. I can't say them all on the radio, yeah. FCC, Jim, but a little short exchange, if you'll indulge me. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet, just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they just let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the expletive. Attorney Roberta Kaplan asked Trump during the deposition. That's what you say, correct? Trump replies, well, historically, that's true with stars. It's true that you can grab women by the, and Kaplan repeats the expletive. Well, if you look over the last billion years, that's been largely true. Not always, but largely true. Unfortunately or fortunately, Trump said. Effectively, what? And he was asked further, you know, is that what you said? Are you a star? And he says, yes, I am. So effectively, he's confessing his behaviors. Fortunately, I've been able to do this to women through the years because I'm a star is what he, if you look through a couple of the blanks, Jim, that's what the man said in a sworn deposition that got used in court this week. That's kind of damning, is it not, Counselor?
It's hugely damaging. And again, it's good we're not saying those words on this good radio broadcast. But again, Roberta Kaplan, again, two Kaplans in this case, there's Kaplan, the judge, and counsel for the plaintiff. She knows what she's doing. And once again, why is that relevant? Because it shows his pattern and practice, right? And rather than even in this deposition saying, you know what, I was talking to Billy Bush at the time. We were having a good time. I was saying some things. And
locker room talk. He didn't say it was locker room talk.
Which again is offensive in and of itself. But if he wanted to back off of that, she was giving him the chance to do it, to say, you know what, I recognize that I was over the line. I don't do that. I was just being the bravura, the bravado, rather, that I engage in. He didn't do it. He doubled down on it. And he basically said, yeah, that's right. That's what happens in the world in which I live. And that is what I do. And there again, Judge Kaplan looks at that and says, gee, that sounds an awful lot like what Jean Carroll has testified to in the early conversation. They had this back and forth. There's some flirting going on. And Donald Trump, once again, takes advantage of his situation, his posture, if you will, in the society. And he, forgive me, he grabs, right? And that's exactly what happens. Very much related to this case. If it had been something entirely different about some other interaction with other people, maybe a different result. The judge finds that is relevant for the jury to hear. And they do, in fact, hear it. Again, supporting this notion that a case based upon something that happened a quarter century ago is fairly compelling. And again, understands a civil case, preponderance of the evidence, not a unanimous verdict beyond a reasonable doubt, but just preponderance. I think there's a good chance this jury could listen to all of this and say there is liability here and we're going to award her some significant damages.
Well, we'll check in on this topic again next week. You are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Our fine guest, James Santel. He's a star, a bright, shining star. Jim, I got to ask you about the Jenny Thomas, the $25,000 question.
Another $25,000.
Not only are they taking these grandiose cruises and vacations and helicopter rides to Russia is the latest destination, my understanding.
And a kid that he's raising as his own tuition.
I can barely keep up with all the reporting coming out of ProPublica. But what do you think of this shielded sort of graft money given? My words, not yours, counselor, but graft money given to Jenny Thomas, maybe to influence her husband, or maybe just because she's a conservative operative. But it was shielded from the public, and it was not disclosed. And my understanding, Dom referenced the money for the grandnephew, raised like a child. They made other disclosures of people that had contributed prior, but not the Harlan Crow character, not this billionaire super donor who apparently paid 150 grand worth of tuition. Starting to add up to Dom's bar tab.
Real money, Jim.
Sooner or later, the tab gets fairly long, and that's it. I think we're all challenged these days to keep up with the news here. And you know what? There will be more. The media is going to find out more about this. What does this particular event show? Not only, again, this inappropriate relationship that she is getting this money. Her husband is making decisions in this area. And the fact that he doesn't disclose this when he discloses other things makes it clear that he understands the need to disclose. He doesn't do it here because he knows it's inappropriate. That's also very compelling. They need desperately to put together an ethics code immediately.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. That's James Santel. That Leonard Leo, he got like $1.6 billion he's going to dish around. We'll be right back.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, sticking around for the final segment. Jim, thank you for doing so. I got to throw this one out there. Breaking news from the Washington Post today. Apparently, 8 of the 16 fraudulent fake electors in Georgia have agreed to some deal with Fani Willis. Jim, I know it's new news, but any sense?
Absolutely. I'm not surprised by this at all. We've chatted about this a little bit before in a previous broadcast. Not surprising. Fani Willis looks at them and says, you're plainly at a minimum witnesses. You are almost certainly subjects, but almost even more likely targets of our investigation. Why? You yourself engaged in conduct to try to defraud the people of Georgia of their proper electoral votes. And so she says, you've got some exposure here. Don't know exactly what the agreements may well be there, but entirely appropriate for her to say, in exchange for your testimony, grand jury and trial testimony, we will then engage in some deal with you, some arrangement with you that will perhaps limit your exposure. Maybe they're getting complete passes, complete immunity, maybe getting some other reduction in sentence. And it's to their benefit to do that because, again, probably the evidence there, should I mention also here in Wisconsin, is fairly clear that these are people engaged in activities, signed documents purporting to be things other than who they are for the purpose of undermining our election, to misrepresenting to the court, to Mike Pence, to Nancy Pelosi, what those electoral votes are. That's fraud. That's an attempt to undermine our elections and change the course of history. Seems to me that there should be a criminal response to that. Not good news for Donald Trump, of course, and others involved in Fani Willis's overall review of this. She's obviously looking very broadly beyond the call to the Secretary of State for 11,780 votes, looking very broadly. This is a part of it too. A good sign that when she comes out finally with an indictment here, maybe sometime later this month, this will be a lot of people, a lot of different tendrils there in Georgia.
Jim Santel, here's my concern. We've heard the charges imminent, and I really care a lot about the pressuring of elections official and the seeking of 11,780 votes. We've heard the tape. We've seen the smoking gun. We know it exists. Today, Brian Kemp, the Georgia governor, signed a law that empowers him to fire local prosecutors. And the timing of this seems entirely conspicuous to me. Now, overall, Brian Kemp has seemed moderate compared to the MAGA crowd, but he's still a Republican. And this happened in his state, and he's not empowered to pardon the former president or Lindsey Graham or any of the other targets of this investigation, but he sure as hell could cut it off at the knees if he fires Fani Willis. Jim, any trepidation, sir?
Absolutely. Again, an attempt as Donald Trump did, you know, with the Mueller investigation. I'm going to stop the investigator, right? I don't like what that person's doing. I'm going to fire them. In that case, it's Jim Comey. Obviously, a shot across Fani Willis's bow, and she plainly will not yield to that. A couple of responses. One is, boy, legislatively, I'd like to think that a court in America would look at that and say, wildly inappropriate for a legislature to give the governor the power to undo a decision by the constituents who elected that person. That's putting the rule of law on its head wildly. And secondly, again, beyond that, a bold-faced attempt to stop this investigation. And frankly, if you do fire Fani Willis, this is the second point, is it doesn't mean you're not going to have prosecutors. You like to think somebody else pops up there and says, okay, I'll take that up too. Maybe if I fire that person, this is kind of the Saturday Night Live scenario. I'm sorry, the Saturday Night Massacre scenario, also Saturday Night Live perhaps, but Saturday Night Live Massacre theory. At some point, prosecutors will still be there to prosecute. Cases don't go away just because you get rid of the person who's signing off on the indictment, whose face is on the nightly news. Other prosecutors are out there. I don't want to say we're a dime a dozen, but they're out there and they can pick up what a previously terminated prosecutor has left when he or she leaves office.
Jim, the Department of Justice, we had a little mini Merrick Garland party yesterday. Some of the Proud Boys, the third time, a third case, three different juries have now heard seditious conspiracy charges against some of these Trump backers, and now have returned. They're 3-0, DOJ on seditious conspiracy. This time, the Proud Boys. Jim, when are they going to go after Trump? And what does this mean for building the case to the higher ups?
Right. We got Enrique Terrio and four of other folks, seditious conspiracy, the fifth one, also found guilty of felonies yesterday. Facing huge penalties here, approaching 50 years in prison. They may not get that. Very significant, as you said, three times out, the Department of Justice successful in doing this. The reason why I think this is so important is we think about what happened here. This is an assembly. This is not political people. 12 people assembled, jury of peers, looked at the evidence once again, and in a courtroom of all the evidence presented, and said, yes, indeed, this is not just criminal behavior in the terms of destruction of property, entry into a building they shouldn't be in. This was an attempt to overthrow the government. And they found that unanimously. They found that beyond a reasonable doubt as to four of the five. It also shows that they're discerning, right? They looked at this other fellow and said, Pozzola, well, not quite as much indication there. That's a jury that's doing its job, right? And so Donald Trump should look at all this and say, gosh, those are American people. Those are not members. Yeah, they probably have partisan views of their own, but it's not the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party. These are people pulled off the street. They looked at this evidence and they said, conspiracy to overthrow the government. That's a very significant thing for Donald Trump to be thinking about, other people to be thinking about in his circle, and the Department of Justice, certainly buoyed by, again, as you said, a third conviction. And hopefully Jack Smith is looking at this. Hopefully Jack Smith now on a timetable to indict the former president and other people around him, narrowing the prosecution unit, as we've talked before, to something that's understandable and you can grab onto it as a jury, but making clear that this is the January 6th is the most significant criminal act that he engaged in throughout his term in office. And that's saying a lot because he did a lot of other things, as we well know. This one's got to be prosecuted, encouraged by this conviction of people not at the top, but a seditious conspiracy by people who are organizing others to do what we saw on January 6th, a huge, huge event, again, in American history.
Jim Santel, host of Morning Cannolis, right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. Jim, you mentioned Jack Smith. My understanding is he sat in for the deposition, the Mike Pence January 6th deposition, although maybe it was about Mar-a-Lago, who knows? Do you read any tea leaves there, counselor?
Yeah, the fact that the vice president's there for a long period of time, this is not an in and out. Again, the presiding judge said executive privilege doesn't apply. Donald Trump's motion to quash doesn't apply. Even the speech or debate clause says, okay, I mean, you don't have to testify about things you said in the Congress, but everything outside, including conversations with your former boss before on January 6th, which we know are very relevant, the WIMP conversation afterwards, all of that comes in. So presumably if Mike Pence told the truth and reasonably believe that he probably doesn't want to perjure himself as a president, future presidential candidate, a lot of testimony provided here, a very important witness too, because this is a fellow who had direct contact with the president, relevant periods of time, can talk about, again, Donald Trump's mindset, the things he said, the things he intended on that day. I would say, is a key witness also for trial. If in fact the grand jury indicts and then brings this matter to a petit jury before a district court there in D.C.
Jim Santel, our fine guest, friend of the Devil's Advocates, former U.S. attorney, and most importantly, host of Morning Cannolis tomorrow, 9 to 11 a.m. And Jim, you got some Brewer tickets to give away because we didn't get to it. Pizza Box Mike coming up on the network at 7 o'clock, at least here on WMDX in Madison. Get well soon, Maggie Dawn. She'll be our fine guest on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you on Monday on the radio.